Yes, certainly. In regards to Olivia, love in the age of mechanical reproduction is absolute proof, because seldom is poetry so deeply intense, so intensely deep, that you can recognize it as what it is, one of the leading art forms in the world. It fathoms, Olivia's work fathoms and plummets those areas of human feeling and pain which are usually so powerful, so overwhelming, that anyone caught by them moves beyond verbal expression, beyond the range of speech and the ability to discuss anything at all. Olivia has managed to get into that area and yet retain the ability to speak and do it formidably and with great power. She can verbalize the unverbalizable, which she does through widely disparate images and references, with a fractured, dislocated, and beautiful language that theoretically should fail to communicate, but nevertheless succeeds in doing this wonderfully and miraculously. Macassi is the kind of poet editors, publishers, and readers like to discover, but rarely manage to. Her writing, and I said this in issue 29 of Poetry NZ, in which her work was featured, belongs as much to the spoken word as it does to its visual representation. It's filled with the cadences and rhythms of everyday speech and accords perfectly with what's been said by Brian Wolpert of Massey University. Its continuing flux of multiple references exploits the language's natural polysemy. It defers meaning not only through a rich and variable interplay of signifiers, but also through a subtle and varied mix and interchange of signifieds, its references. Her subject matter is constantly elusive, constantly escaping, while at the same time playing on the uncertainty and unpredictability of what her poems are connecting between the so-called real world out there and that other world which each of us inhabits, or which, as Olivia might say, inhabits us. Both are terrible and dangerous, and in this aspect of her work, readers of her poems will inevitably recognize, share in, and hopefully respond to the manifest and subsumed threats, risks, and pain which are unavoidably part of existence and of her poems. Best of all, though, is the totality of the experience Olivia's poetry offers, the complex variety and subtlety of aesthetic flavors and the sensations it allows readers to experience with her. It possesses a level of excellence and a distinction of style and manner that foretell her future will include a long and notable literary career. Now, I don't say these things lightly. I don't say them just to amuse us and Olivia. I say it because I mean it. And I'd like to read one of her short poems to demonstrate the truth of this. It's called Beneath Silence, Veil 7. There is nothing outside this room except for the rain driven almost sideways by wind. There is nothing that will make any difference. There is nothing but those words which make up the gaps between the words which are meant to matter. Eyes you will find do not glint moonlight, they suck it in. There is inside me a subterranean lake of tears. There are the shadows made by scraggly trees against the gravel at night. There are the slow inscriptions of stars over the sky, the horrible intimacy of the moorpork from somewhere behind the shoulder of night. So that each sentence bays after false moonlight. If it were possible now to leave the words which we light on the fire and throw into the darkness of other words, if it were possible now to cut out our tongues without the act itself speaking, if it were possible for movement to cease, then I could die with you in the room where sun lights upon the dust. I could allow that final, private horror. There is no such thing as time. Rivets in the wings of angels. No, I do not want to meet you afterwards. The lure of the grave is surely its silence. the second of death, surely the realization that finally we have nothing to say. And the fact that Olivia can say it when there is nothing to say says what kind of poet she is. Thank you.